I felt dreadful. But Thomas seemed quite unconcerned. He called down firmly, "We'll let you out as soon as you've written something. Say 50 pages. "I never wrote 50 pages in less than 3 months, even when I could write," said Father, his voice cracking worse than ever. "Oh, won't you just try to write, Father? Write anything. Write The Cat Sat on the Mat, if you like. Anything, as long as you write," I cried. Thomas pulled me to my feet and steered me down the steps. "We ought never to have done it," I sobbed as we went down the mound. "I shall let him out tonight, even if he kills us." "No, you won't. Remember your oath." We had sworn not to give in until both of us agreed to it. "I'm not weakening yet. We'll see how he is after dinner." As soon as daylight began to fade, Thomas got the pyjamas and dressing gown and lit a lantern. There wasn't a sound as we approached the tower. When we opened the door, Father was sitting at the table with his back towards us. He turned round with a cigar in one hand and a pencil in the other.
"Your brilliant idea's done the trick," he cried, hoarsely but happily. "The miracle's happened. I've begun."
"How wonderful," I gasped.
"Now hurry up with that ladder. I want to get back to the gatehouse and work all night."
"But you're in an ideal place to work all night," said Thomas. "Moving to the gatehouse would only disrupt you. Here are your pyjamas and dressing gown. I'll come along early in the morning. Good night, Father." He threw the clothes down, shut the door, and took me firmly by the elbow. "Come on, Cassandra." I went without argument. It is now nearly 4 o'clock in the morning. I didn't wake Thomas at 2 because I wanted to bring this entry up to date, and the poor boy is sleeping so exhaustedly. He is on the sofa here. He didn't think there was any need for us to keep watch tonight, but I insisted. There is actually a car on the Godsend Road. It is strange to watch the headlights and wonder who is driving through the night. Oh, heavens! The car has turned into our lane. What am I to do? Keep calm, keep calm. It has only taken the wrong turning. It will back out, or at worst turn round when it gets to the castle. But people who get as far as the castle usually stop to stare at it. And if Father has heard the car, could his voice possibly carry? It just might in the still night air. Oh, go back, go back. It is coming on and on. I feel like someone keeping a journal to the last second of an approaching catastrophe. The catastrophe has happened. Simon and Topaz are getting out of the car. Thomas and I ran into the kitchen just as Topaz was striking a match to light the lamp. I heard Simon's voice before I saw his face. "Is Rose here?" "Rose?" I must have sounded utterly blank. "Oh, my God," said Simon. The lamp shone out, and I caught his look of utter misery. "She's disappeared," said Topaz. "We thought she might have come down here to be with you, so we drove straight down." "Well, she's safe, anyway," I said to Simon. "I had a telegram from her, though it only said she'd write when she could, and would I please try to understand?" It had just dawned on me that the bit about understanding didn't refer to our quarrel at all, but to her running away. "Where was the telegram handed in?" said Topaz. "I didn't notice. I'll get it and see. It was in my bedroom." I spread the telegram out under the lamp. "Why, it's from that little seaside place where we went for the picnic," I said to Simon. "Why on earth would she go there?" said Thomas. "And why couldn't the silly ass explain in her note?" "She explained all right," said Simon. "Thanks for trying to spare my feelings, Topaz, but it's really rather pointless." He took the note from his pocket and put it down by the telegram. "You may as well see what she says." It was just a penciled scribble. "Dear Simon, I want you to know that I wasn't lying in the beginning. I really thought I loved you. Now there is nothing I can do but beg your forgiveness. Rose."